You're listening to the 2013 Year in Review. Now, back to Rand Northam.
We'll return to our countdown in just a moment, but now it's time to remember those in our community we've lost this year. Chapel Hill resident Duval Watson died in early April after being thrown from a charter bus. He and his wife, Teresa, organized a trip to Hampton University on the east coast of Virginia each year for high school students for the university's open house day. The bus they chartered for the trip lost control on Route 58 just north of the Virginia state line, ran off the road, and crashed. Duval and Teresa were both thrown from the vehicle, and Duval died at the scene. After being trapped under the bus, Teresa was rescued by officials and airlifted to Norfolk General Hospital, where she was treated and released days later. In mid-June, North Carolina's 68th governor and first Republican governor of the 20th century, Jim Holzhauser, died at the age of 78 after a prolonged illness. James Hubert Holzhauser was a native of Boone before he graduated from Davidson College. He then received his law degree from UNC Chapel Hill and later returned to Watauga County, where he practiced law with his father. Holzhauser served as governor of North Carolina from 1973 to 1977. Also in mid-June, the UNC healthcare system lost two respected and cherished doctors. 42-year-old Dr. Keith Amos, assistant professor of surgery and surgical oncologist, died unexpectedly while traveling as a visiting scholar in Scotland. Dr. George Sheldon, who chaired the UNC Department of Surgery from 1984 to 2001, died due to illness at UNC hospitals. He was 78 years old. Longtime Chapel Hill attorney William Griffin Graves III died November 23rd after a short illness. 63-year-old Griff Graves, as he was known, had entered UNC hospitals earlier in the week for back surgery, but after the procedure he suffered a heart attack, which required open-heart surgery. His death was the apparent result of complications from the surgery. And longtime Chapel Hill resident and proprietor of the University Inn and Pine Restaurant, Charles Nottingham, died December 4th at the age of 94. Nottingham died at Carolina Meadows, where he was residing. He was a lieutenant commander in the U.S. Navy and served in World War II.
Number 3.
With just three stories left, we return to our countdown and return to Chapel Hill. In 2012, the town came together to create a vision for future growth. In 2013, the town woke up to realization that implementing that plan might be more difficult than first imagined. This past year, Chapel Hill launched a slew of planning exercises to translate the lofty ideals of the 2020 plan into concrete direction for residents and developers. The first was the Central West Steering Committee, charged with creating a plan for future development at the intersection of Estes Drive and Martin Luther King Jr. Boulevard. But the process was highly contentious, as neighbors felt their input was largely ignored. David Tuttle was appointed to the committee to represent residents of the area.
We strongly disagree with this picture that the high density is needed to save our neighborhoods.
After nearly a year of debate and $250,000 in consultant fees, the council unanimously adopted a plan that was smaller and less dense than originally proposed. Committee co-chair Amy Ryan said that was a direct response to community criticism.
We heard back loud and clear that this is too big and too dense. So when we came back and worked up the final Central West plan, you'll see that our numbers have gone down considerably.
Ultimately, neighbors said their work garnered key concessions, including the promise of comprehensive studies of traffic and economic impact that will guide the town council in future decisions. The work of the Obie Creek Compass Committee has been less contentious, but only because the majority of committee members are united in their opposition to the plan that's already in the works. Developer Roger Perry wants to build a mixed-use project across from Southern Village that's roughly the same size as South Point Mall. He says the 1.5 million square foot development plan is key to the project's economic viability.
You want us to be successful. The last thing you want is a failure here. We feel like that this is a scale that is in the best interest of being successful for us and the town.
But many of the committee say that's too much. Throughout 2013, their work focused on scaling it down, but in the end, the group decided the town council needs to get more information and a whole new plan before moving negotiations to the next phase. In January, the town council will decide what happens next for Obie Creek. Meanwhile, across town, the Ephesus Fordham redevelopment plan has been moving forward without much debate. But the plan does raise questions about how the town will apply a new zoning technique where council draws boxes on a map and developers fill them in using brick and mortar. And many are worried that the redevelopment of aging apartments will mean the loss of affordable housing in the area. As the town continues to implement the Chapel Hill 2020 plan, areas such as Glen Lennox, Rosemary Street, and the northern edge of 15501 could be targeted for big changes. Chapel Hill's future is coming, ready or not. For our number three newsmaker, let's take a trip to Carrboro, where as we usher out 2013, we usher out the town's mayor. WCHL's Aaron Keck has the story.
After more than two decades in town government and 8 years as Carrboro mayor, Mark Chilton had already developed a reputation as an outspoken political figure with a flair for the dramatic.
Something there is that doesn't love a wall, that sends the frozen groundswell under it.
Did Dr. Chow get who we are as a community at all? Okay. That issue was litigated in Orange County Superior Court. That's been decided.
I know it's not Chapel Hill's responsibility.
I know 43% of it is Chapel Hill's responsibility.
If you screw up so bad that you get a parking ticket in the town of Carrboro, there's definitely nothing that I can do to help you.
But in the summer of 2013, Mark Chilton took his advocacy to a new level and in so doing helped spur a movement that's resonated on a national stage.
Well, I was the very first person arrested.
On June 3rd, Chilton was one of more than 150 who were arrested at the state legislature in what was dubbed Mega Moral Monday.
They had no authority to make us leave the building. We had a constitutional right to be there.
It was the largest Moral Monday protest yet, but it was the presence of elected officials that particularly grabbed the national attention. Many of those elected officials were from Orange County, including enough members of the Carrboro Board of Aldermen to constitute a quorum, and Chilton was the most prominent among them.
Not only gutting our social safety net and our educational system and our environmental safeguards, but they're also trying to make their changes permanent by changing our system of elections.
But while Chilton made headlines in June for standing against the state legislature, in August he was back in the news for trying to join it.
I have decided to put my name forward as a person to be appointed to replace Senator Kinnaird.
Chilton ultimately lost the appointment to replace Ellie Kinnaird in the state Senate. Valerie Fouché got it instead, but polls consistently showed him leading all the declared candidates among the voters themselves. After all that, Mark Chilton actually ended 2013 by leaving politics, at least temporarily, stepping down as Carrboro mayor after four terms. Hundreds of people came out to a retirement roast for Chilton in October, making it clear he's already left a significant legacy from his work with Empowerment, Inc.
Having his knowledge, having his ability has just made it wonderful.
To the many people he's inspired in his long career in politics.
When he was elected in 1991 and took office at the age of 21, that showed a whole generation of us that we actually could do stuff.
He's still young, barely 40, and it's likely we'll see a lot more of Mark Chilton in the years to come. Mark Chilton, our number three newsmaker of 2013. Aaron Keck, 97.9 FM, WCHL.
Number two.
We experienced a historic rainfall here in Chapel Hill. 5 to 7 inches in a 24-hour period proved to be too much.
Chapel Hill Mayor Mark Kleinschmidt addressed the public at a press conference 3 days after 8 inches of rain fell on the town between June 28th and July 1st, causing the worst flood in what some say was some 30-plus years. The heaviest of the rain, 5.06 inches, fell within 19 hours. Nearly 150 residents in three apartment and condominium complexes were damaged or destroyed, according to the town of Chapel Hill. A shelter was set up at Smith Middle School on the night of June 30th, where more than 100 people stayed overnight. Some Carrboro residents spoke out, saying the flooding will persist unless the town makes some major changes to its infrastructure. Carrboro Alderman Jacqueline Giss spoke at a board meeting in September about the flooding problems that continue to impact neighbors along Old Pittsboro Road.
I think that the type of rain event we're getting is really changing. It's more intense. It's more often. I don't think that our infrastructure can handle this change. It was built towards a different type of rain event.
Several residents who live along Old Pittsboro Road, like Kelly Dimock, asked the board to consider ways to mediate the problem.
I just wanted to make sure that was clear, that it happens frequently and that it's extreme. It's not just the water in the ditch.
Carrboro Mayor Mark Chilton explained that if the town tried diverting water from one area, it would lead to flooding in another area.
Even if we had a brilliant plan for moving it faster off of the Old Pittsboro Road, what you're talking about is getting it down to Rockenberg Trailer Park even faster and even more dramatically.
Mayor Chilton ultimately turned to the town staff, asking them to investigate the current infrastructure problems, then consult with AWASA and return with a report to be presented at the September 17th board meeting. The first floor of Chapel Hill's town hall flooded following the torrential rains, soaking carpets, furniture, drywall, and the council dais. The town also had to repair 18 apartments at Airport Gardens, a public housing neighborhood off of Martin Luther King Jr. Boulevard. Town officials said it may take up to a year before town hall is ready to fully reopen, and repairs could cost as much as $400,000. But after all the discussion, the council voted 7-1 November 25th to allocate an additional $860,000 to renovate two-thirds of town hall. Now back to the hard court for our number two newsmaker of 2013. UNC women's basketball coach Sylvia Hatchell saw a roller coaster year, from winning her 900th career basketball game and being inducted to the Naismith Hall of Fame to temporarily stepping away from coaching after being diagnosed with leukemia. Hatchell got win number 900 on February 7th against Boston College.
UNC beats Boston College 80-52, your final score. And how about that? Sylvia Hatchell coasts to her 900th career victory in Division I women's basketball.
I'm just so blessed to have had opportunities. I mean, it just doesn't get any better than it is at Carolina, and all the wonderful players I've had and my staff.
She finished the season with 908 wins, second only to the all-time Division I basketball leader, Pat Summitt. Hatchell became the first woman with UNC ties to be inducted into the Naismith Hall of Fame September 8th.
When I first got the call, I'm like, okay, when am I going to wake up here? Is this for real?
She's now part of an elite group of nine other Tar Heels in the Naismith Hall of Fame, including coaches Frank McGuire, Dean Smith, and Larry Brown, player coach Billy Cunningham, and players James Worthy, Robert McAdoo, and Michael Jordan. But on October 14th, UNC Athletics announced Hatchell would temporarily step away from the head coaching role effective immediately due to a diagnosis of leukemia. Hatchell returned home November 8th after nearly a month at the UNC Lineberger Comprehensive Cancer Center. While she was there, her spirits remained high. She even tweeted a picture of her head just after having it shaved. On her way out of the hospital, she stopped to tell reporters that nothing can keep her down.
I'm doing great. You know, the doctors, I can't believe how well I've done and how I've taken the treatments, and I've exercised every day. Only one day did I not exercise. But I feel really good. My numbers are great right now. In fact, they were a whole lot better than when I came in here.
Hatchell wrote an article for Thanksgiving in which she said she's leaving it up to God to take her through this difficult journey. She wrote, quote, "My belief is that God is sovereign. I said a long time ago, I'm all yours. And when you say that, you better mean it, because you don't know what it could bring. I'm not bitter. I know there's a reason for this. I feel honored that he would use me in whatever way he wants to use me. If what I'm going through helps one person, then it's worth it," end quote. Hatchell was with the team at Carmichael Arena December 4th before Carolina's game against Nebraska. She has not yet returned to coaching duties, but we wish her all the best in 2014.
You're listening to the 2013 Year in Review. Coming up next,
we'll bring you our top story and our top newsmaker of 2013.
Stay tuned.